Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. After confronting Ali Fain with the news of Teska's death, Carla seeks a way to get on better terms with Jordan. Chapter 17. What did you think of the service? Carla asked Wick as they made their way out of the church with the rest of the congregation. They were some of the last to leave the building, having been seated in the balconies along with the other visitors and the younger members of the abbey. The main floor was reserved for the monks with the greatest seniority, and by tradition, they left the church first.
"It was different,"
Wick replied in a low voice, sounding uncomfortable.
"Thought it would be more like the ones back home."
"I found it intriguing," Grievous commented. "The hymns were very sophisticated, and the harmonies had an exotic appeal, though I did not understand the language."
"It was Malakan," Carla told him, "but an old dialect. About a third of the words got by me. I heard things about celebrating the joy of discovery, being the first to see something no one else had ever seen before, and the pleasure in showing this to others." She smiled. "I suppose it's when they can glimpse, at least for a moment, the Father's handiwork, the full span of creation." She looked at Wick. "You didn't like it?"
"They barely mentioned the son or the daughter," the guard grumbled, and Carla was surprised to see that Wick was genuinely offended. "Their shrines weren't even in there."
"Wick, they're in the adjoining chapels at the back of the church," she explained. "You follow the bannered halls to the right and left of the altar. Red banners for the son, green for the daughter."
"I figured that much out," Wick snapped. Then he flushed. "Pardon me, mistress. I forgot myself. I've never been to a church where the shrines weren't all together."
"A lot of the churches on the mainland are like that," she told him. "Different chapels for each aspect of the triad. And whichever of the three has received the primary dedication is usually the largest one. I expect that the daughter's mercy back in Maipur is like that. Most of the churches in the Frieze are fairly small, though, so all three shrines are grouped together."
Wick shrugged. "I suppose. But what was that symbol the abbot had atop his staff? It had three discs for the triad, but the father's disc was larger than the other two, and there was no central disc in the middle of them. It wasn't right."
He looked at his companions, and remembering that Carla and Grievous didn't share his faith, he turned to Clegg as a last resort.
"You saw it wasn't the right symbol, didn't you?"
Clegg chuckled.
"To be honest, lad, I was just looking at the gems that made up the three discs. Big enough that I'd expect them to be colored glass."
And here he turned to look at Carla.
"But if they were real, then the ruby and emerald would each have been worth the bounty Jolly put on your head. And as for that sapphire..."
He made a low whistle.
"I'm surprised thieves haven't come by for that alone."
Maybe they did, Carla thought to herself. Galen did say that he'd come here once. He's never been able to resist taking a closer look at a piece of jewelry, and rumors of a gem that size would certainly have drawn his interest. "Well, Sister Miriam said the church here dates back to an earlier style. Perhaps the staff and the other ornamentation is from that era as well. Wick, if these things bother you, don't keep it to yourself. Ask someone here about it. As we've seen, the monks seem glad to receive questions. Just be ready for a long answer." She chucked him on the shoulder. "Get into the spirit of this place. Make it a learning experience." Wick sighed and gave her a slow nod. As they passed through the narthex and stepped outside, Carla spotted Ali Fain a short distance away. Her clothing was simple, matching red-brown jacket and skirt with a cream blouse. At first, the only sign of her grief from last night that Carla could see was a slight puffiness under the eyes, but then she noticed what was pinned to the left lapel of her jacket.
"Oh, that's laying it on a bit thick," Wick muttered when he saw it too, his irritation neatly shifting to a new subject. "A mourning brooch. Like as not there'd be a widow's shawl over her head as well if she'd packed one."
Carla said nothing, looking at the brooch. She had seen them before in Kohane. It was a miniature variation on the black frames around a deceased loved one's portrait. In the case of the brooches, the centerpiece, a jewel or a cameo, was deliberately removed and replaced with a piece of black silk. "Which piece of jewelry did she break to make it, do you think?" she wondered aloud. Clegg stepped up next to her, squinting.
She's not lacking for other baubles, though. You see the ruby earrings and matching necklace she's wearing? They'd fetch a fair bit of coin.
They're pretty, too, Carla admitted. She's got good taste. Then she paused. There was something about Allie's jewelry that seemed familiar, but she couldn't place it. Then Allie turned away and started walking toward the dining hall, Benito at her side, Jordan trailing behind. Grievous, who had remained behind on the church steps, suddenly smiled and descended into the crowd.
Drusus! He called, making his way toward another Sabrian, who turned at the sound of his name.
Carla had somehow expected Drusus to be younger than Grievous, but when she saw him, she realized that the two men were roughly the same age. As Grievous had mentioned, Drusus had stooped shoulders common to many of the older monks here, though he still bore himself with the aloof dignity that she associated with Sabrians. Like Grievous, Drusus shaved his head, but he also had a short, graying beard edging his jaw and chin, and wore spectacles with round lenses. Standing next to him was a younger Sabrian, dressed very plain, holding Drusus's jacket over his arm and a leather satchel over his shoulder.
Oh my, yes, greetings, Captain,
Drusus stammered in Sabrian. Grievous nodded politely to him, and after a moment, the Sabrian scholar succumbed to the pressures of decorum and returned the nod more deeply than Grievous had done.
What a surprise to find you here.
A surprise indeed, Grievous replied, but a most pleasant one. What brings you here? You must have a most wealthy client to sponsor a trip so far from the Empire.
Yes, yes, Drusus said, a most interesting place. I regret that I did not hear of it sooner.
I share that regret. How long have you been here?
Not terribly long, a few months at most.
Drusus did not extend the conversation, and after a moment Grievous gave him another nod.
Well, how very nice it is to see you, Grievous went on, ignoring the man's awkwardness. I enjoy the opportunity to converse in the mother tongue. We must do so again before long.
An excellent idea, Captain. Yes, indeed. Fare you well.
Drusus bowed lower in response, once more deferring to Grievous. Then he straightened up and began to walk in the direction of the dining hall. The younger Sabrian looked puzzled at the abrupt departure, and after a hasty nod of his own, hastened to catch up with Drusus. Grievous watched his two countrymen walk away for a moment before turning on his heel and returning to Carla and the others.
Curious, was all he said.
Well, he didn't look half pleased to see you, Clegg chuckled. Can't imagine why.
Nor can I, Grievous replied. We parted on very favorable terms.
He sighed.
Perhaps he has heard of the events which prompted my departure from the Empire.
Oh, what might they be?
The cook asked. Never heard them myself.
Nor shall you, pirate.
This answer seemed to satisfy Clegg, who chuckled.
That was a little strange, Carla agreed. He didn't even introduce you to the man with him. Was that his son?
A servant, Grievous replied, someone to carry his books for him. An apprentice scholar, perhaps.
He frowned, looking back at Drusus.
Most curious. But if he wishes to keep such matters private, that is his affair. For, he added, we have our own work ahead of us, do we not?
That we do, Carla agreed. Breakfast and then to the map archives?
An excellent idea, Grievous replied.
The group started walking toward the dining hall, but they were intercepted by Brother Hollam.
Mistress, the monk said, the abbot has asked that you join him for breakfast in his office this morning.
Oh, of course, brother, I'd be happy to accept. Captain Grievous, however, is eager to begin his research.
Yes, he's been most patient, the monk replied. As to that, I've been asked to take him up to the archives myself after breakfast.
I'm sure the captain has no objections to that, she said with a look at Grievous, who nodded in agreement. So, how do I get to his office?
I have just the guide for you, Hollam answered, turning away from her. Jordan, he called.
The youth, who was trailing after Allie Fane, stopped to look back. In the morning light, Jordan's bruised face was a brilliant purple, and combined with the splint and bandage across the bridge of his nose, it looked like he was wearing a mask. He frowned at Hallam's beckoning gesture, glancing back at Allie for a moment, then obeyed the summons with a frustrated scowl. Allie didn't even turn around as he left. Jordan stomped up to Hallam.
"Yes, brother?"
"Jordan, the abbot has invited this young lady to join him for breakfast. I need you to escort her up to his office."
Carla smiled. She had been trying to think of ways to talk to Jordan without drawing undue attention from either Grievous or Allie, and she suspected this was the abbot's way of helping her with that. "Whenever you're ready, Jordan," she told him. Then to Grievous, "Good hunting, Captain." Grievous's eyes sparkled in anticipation.
"Thank you, Fratonobellum."
"Don't dawdle getting her up there, Jordan," Hallam said to the youth, but he was smiling as he said it. "The abbot is expecting to offer his guest a hot breakfast. Answer any questions she might have, but there will be time later to give her a full tour of the preservatory."
"Yes, brother," Jordan mumbled, looking nonplussed as Hallam led the others toward the dining hall. He stared down at the ground, avoiding Kerla's eyes. The silence between them grew more awkward, until at last Kerla offered,
"Think of it this way, you could be mucking out the stables instead."
Jordan only grunted a reply, but Kerla saw him hiding a grudging smile.
"How's your nose feeling?" she asked.
"Fine," he grumbled.
His voice didn't sound as muddled as it had yesterday, and this close, she could see that the swelling had gone down somewhat.
"Hurts less."
"Well, that's good. I'm sorry about how things went yesterday, outside with the pilgrims."
Jordan did not respond.
"So, you give tours?"
Jordan rolled his eyes and sighed.
"Yes, I give tours, when I'm not running errands for the monks or studying."
"All right. What sort of things do you study? Do you have a favorite subject?"
Jordan turned to face her.
"Why are you asking me all these questions?"
She shrugged.
"I'm just trying to make conversation."
"Well, don't. I'm not your friend, and I'm not going to be. Not after how rude you were to the Lady Fane."
"The Lady Fane?" Carla repeated, incredulous. "You mean Allie? Did she ask you to call her that?"
"No," Jordan defended. "I just did the first time I met her."
He glanced toward the figure of Allie, still visible among the crowd of brown-robed monks.
"She didn't object, though."
Carla sighed.
"Jordan, I don't know what she's told you, but she is not of noble blood. Mistress Fane is the best title she can hope for. Don't give her a rank she hasn't the right to."
She chuckled. "Her head's big enough as it is."
"See, that's what I'm talking about," Jordan angrily retorted. "You cut her down, you belittle her, even behind her back. You don't think I see what you're doing? You're trying to make me turn on her, to become your friend instead of hers."
He turned away, folding his arms across his chest.
"It won't work."
Carla sighed and threw up her hands.
"Fine, I suppose we'd best get started."
"I suppose," Jordan agreed.
He said nothing more as they left the church and began to walk up the road toward Highgate. Carla thought he looked rather ridiculous, slumping along with his hands behind his back, staring at the ground just in front of him, but she knew better than to point this out. She looked up at the high gate ahead of them, the smallest of the abbey's three gatehouses. "I know the abbey's been attacked more than once in its history," she asked Jordan. "Have the interior walls ever been breached?"
"No," Jordan replied. "The one time raiders got inside the abbey, the low gate was a lot lower than it is now. They were stopped at the middle gate, which was little more than a door in a wooden palisade then. After a short siege, they gave up."
He looked up at the wall himself, no longer slouching.
"That was when the monks began turning the walls into what you see here. That was," he thought for a moment, "nearly 200 years ago."
"Very impressive," she said as they entered the gatehouse tunnel.
A moment later, Jordan stopped.
"Can I ask you a question now?"
"Of course."
"You're from the Quad, aren't you?"
"That's right."
"Same as the lady, I mean, the same as Alessandra. What you were talking about last night, that friend of yours who died? Well, if he was such a good friend to you, why aren't you wearing a mourning brooch like she is?"
Carla sighed. "I'm not originally from the Quad. The brooch isn't a custom I grew up with. But if it was, I'd be wearing one. Tesca was like a brother to me."
"Was he like a brother to her, too?"
There was a young man's hope in his voice,
and some part of her regretted what she had to tell him. Best he knows the truth. No, he wasn't. Traditionally, the brooch is worn in memory of family members and spouses. Jordan was crestfallen.
They were married?
No, Carla declared. Well, I'm pretty sure they weren't. Allie likes to exaggerate. She shrugged. Maybe that's how she saw the two of them, or it's how she wanted them to be. Sorry, Jordan, I'm really not the person to ask about that. All I know is, we both loved him in our own fashion.
Jordan looked confused. His name was Teska. A Sabrian?
It's a long story. He was Terrandon, but he grew up in the Empire.
And he worked for the Duke like you?
Carlo was thrown by the unexpected question. I never said I worked for the Duke.
You didn't have to, Jordan replied, a smile forming on his lips, and she realized that his lovesick pose wasn't wholly genuine.
It's obvious. Everyone here knows that the Duke and the Abbot are old friends. I found out that the Duke even studied here in his youth. And the Abbot's a busy man. Not every visitor gets a private audience with him.
Jordan's smile widened as he went on, his gestures becoming more animated. I also know that there's no love lost between the Duke and the Fanes.
So, Alessandra Fane comes here with a Sabrian for some sort of research project in the map archive, and then a little while later you arrive with another Sabrian on the exact same project? And in addition to Captain Grievous, your entourage includes a soldier who follows your orders, and none of you are happy that Alessandra's here.
He beamed at her. What do you think of that?
I think I understand why that sword priest broke your nose.
Jordan's smile fell away as she smiled up at him.
Showing off how smart you are might earn you praise from the monks, but most folk outside these walls don't take so kindly to it. She winked. I might not be there to save you next time.
Jordan's face flushed as he whirled away from her, storming out of the tunnel. Carla groaned and trotted after him.
I'm sorry, she called, stepping into the light. That was me showing off. I apologize. I didn't mean...
Her voice trailed off as she stopped in her tracks, staring up at the massive building before her. She'd seen it yesterday, but from a distance and partially obscured by the walls, she'd underestimated its size. Standing this close, the scale of the structure took her breath away. It dwarfed both the Cathedral of the Daughters' Mercy and the Palazzo in Maipur, and she knew at once that it was very likely the largest man-made structure in the entire frieze. It is impressive, isn't it? Jordan said with no small amount of pride, watching her stare at the building. The Preservatory of St. Ravino.
I... Carla stammered.
It takes some getting used to, the young man went on, enjoying her reaction, even for those of us who live here.
She nodded, letting her eyes take in the entire building, gradually making some sense of its layout. It was not a single building, at least not anymore. There was a sense of a single rectangular structure at the center of the edifice, but its outline was almost totally obscured by myriad additions and extensions, radiating both outward and up. Some of the changes seemed random or obsolete. There was a brick wall wide enough to walk along, linking the second floor of two buildings, with an archway at ground level for people to pass through the wall. But short of climbing or jumping a distance of 20 feet, she saw no way for people using one avenue to reach the other. There was a round building with a set of stone steps built into it, curving around the outside. But the doorway at the top of those steps had been filled in with bricks, and she couldn't see any other entrance into the building. There were other smaller buildings a distance from the main structure, linked to it via stone porticos, and these reminded Carla of the ducal estate. She couldn't hold back a smile, thinking of home. The smile turned bitter when she realized that without Teska there, it didn't feel quite so much like home anymore. Jordan gestured toward one of the many doors leading inside the complex and started walking in that direction.
So, what did you call it? Carla said, catching up to him.
The preservatory? I've never heard that word before. Is it another way of saying library?
The door ahead of them opened and a monk came out, who held the door for Jordan and Carla as they stepped inside. It wasn't until the monk had ruffled Jordan's hair as he passed, which Jordan endured with a good-natured groan, that Carla realized the monk had been a woman.
"We do have a library here," Jordan told her, rearranging his hair with his fingers, "but that's only part of the entire complex." He led her down a stone corridor, supported by arches built in a similar style to the porticos outside. Books, travel diaries, illustrations of plants and wildlife, the maps that Captain Grievous has such an interest in, even sheet music. We have a place for all of these things. We also keep transcripts of interviews with our visitors. "Interviews?" Carla asked, trying to listen and maintain a sense of where she was at the same time. Jordan was maneuvering through these hallways with speed born out of long familiarity. The rooms she passed made it clear that, much like the building's exterior, the interior layout had no obvious pattern to it that she could make sense of. One room she passed looked like a parlor, with comfortable chairs, a lush carpet, and wooden bookshelves on every wall. The next room was twice that size and paneled with large slabs of black-gray slate. There were three monks in that room, each holding a piece of chalk and writing mathematical equations on the slate in different parts of the room. Both times she had wanted to pause at the doors to get a better look at the rooms, but Jordan had already passed them by and she had to trot to keep up with him. "Well, sometimes we have a visitor who doesn't have a way of paying for access to the archives," Jordan told her. "So the monks will interview him, ask him about places he's been, things he's seen. The more interesting and instructive the interview, the longer he has access to the archives." "Couldn't someone just make up stories to, well, build up his credit?" Carla asked. Jordan laughed, the first time she'd seen him do that. "Oh, some have tried, but you'd be surprised how hard it is to fool us. There's usually a book or document somewhere in here that can be used to corroborate a portion of their story. I'm often tasked with tracking down things like that." He grinned. "Those are the best. I get to dig through all sorts of places in the archives." "That does sound like fun," she told him, happy to just keep him talking. "So, all of these things that are collected, what do the monks do with it all?" "Well, the monks may draw upon anything in the archives in the pursuit of their own studies," Jordan explained, "and their work is likewise archived upon their deaths for others to use in their turn. They keep everything, making no judgments upon what shall be kept and what shall be discarded." Carla wasn't sure she understood at first. Then she remembered the inscription above the front gate. "Gather unto thee the knowledge of the world, that ye shall preserve it," she began. Jordan stopped at the foot of a long, narrow stair and turned toward her, surprised. "The first thing that pops into my mind when I hear that is a squirrel gathering nuts for the winter." Jordan laughed at the analogy, and suddenly Carla had a thought. "Do the monks think that a cold winter is coming?" The youth took a moment to consider that. "I hadn't thought about it like that before. I've never heard the monks talk about some sort of impending doom, if that's what you mean. But they do believe that sometime in the past there was a cold winter, as you put it, and not enough nuts were gathered before it struck. Much of the world's knowledge was lost. This place was built to ensure that will not happen again." Carla was curious. "I've never heard of any great disaster before. How long ago was this supposed to have happened?" Jordan shrugged. "Well over a millennium ago, perhaps two. It's hard to know when everything fell into ruins. Far easier to measure when mankind finally pulled itself out of the ruins and began to rebuild. The Sabrians are the first that we know of, but on the mainland..." "The nations of Malachi and Terendor," Carla finished. Jordan clucked his tongue like a reproving teacher. "Only Malachi? That was founded first. The rebellion of Terence, Duke of Fashtan, and the subsequent formation of Terendor was close to 100 years later." "Oh," Carla said, embarrassed. "Right. I knew that." Jordan smiled, but didn't gloat, perhaps remembering Carla's advice. "As for when the disaster originally struck and the cause of it, there are several monks here who will talk your ear off if you put that question to them." His smile widened to a grin. "And if you ask more than one, be ready for an argument as loud as any you'd hear on the streets of Maipole. None of them agree with each other." Carla grinned back, and Jordan turned, starting up the stairs. "But each one will have their work archived upon their death, building a legacy for future generations when they grapple with that mystery in their turn." Carla chewed on that as they climbed the stairs. So, she ventured as they reached the next floor, the answer itself isn't as important as asking the question? Jordan stopped and turned back to look at her.
That's right. I've never met a visitor who understood that so quickly.
She could see a struggle of emotions on his face, a new grudging respect for her versus his earlier shame.
Perhaps you hear the Father's call.
Perhaps I do, she offered, startled at the change in him. At the very least, I'm beginning to understand what you're hearing.
This did not produce the result she'd expected. In a flash, Jordan's face turned hard and bitter.
Come on, he said, turning back to continue up the stairs. Like as not, the abbot's breakfast will be getting cold.
Kerla followed, feeling that she'd somehow lost an opportunity.
Just when I thought I'd broken the ice with him. What did I do wrong?
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher.
Now, if you're looking for more speculative audio fiction to fill the gap between these episodes, but don't know where to look, I recommend checking out Synthetic Voices. Each month, podcast critic Jimmy Rogers recommends a few of his favorite episodes from among a wide variety of speculative fiction podcasts. You'll find his top picks read aloud on the Synthetic Voices podcast or listed on his website, scienceismagic.com.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.